Welcome to the InfoWars Nightly News. It is Friday, June 19th, 2015, and I'm Leanne McAdoo. Well, we all know that the government can never let a good crisis go to waste. So before the blood had even dried in this mass shooting, the president was already calling for gun control.
We don't have all the facts, but we do know that, once again, innocent people were killed in part because someone who wanted to inflict harm had no trouble getting their hands on a gun. Now is the time for mourning and for healing. But let's be clear. At some point, we as a country will have to reckon with the fact that this type of mass violence does not happen in other advanced countries.
So obviously, this notion that mass violence doesn't occur in other nations was quickly debunked. The Federalist points out a whole number of instances where civilized countries, you know, have suffered through this. Talk about the Charlie Hebdo attack here in most recent memory. But a deranged Anders Behring Breivik killed 8 people by setting off a van bomb in Oslo before he went on to murder 69 more people, mostly children, at a summer camp. This was the single worst shooting spree incident in history. Goes on to recall instances in Germany, England, and others, as well as developing countries like Rio de Janeiro as well. So going on and on, I mean, you can see that all there at the Federalist. So not saying that this is okay, but just pointing out the fact that Obama's statements are false or maybe half-truths. Now, last year, Obama said, "My biggest frustration has been that this society has not been willing to take some basic steps to keep guns out of the hands of people who can just do unbelievable damage." The U.S. has taken some basic steps to keep guns out of the hands of people who might possibly, you know, want to do harm. And guess what? It turns out that this Charleston shooter passed a background check. He bought a gun after passing this background check. Now, the family claims that they gave him birthday money and they didn't know what he did with it. Initially, we were told that he received that gun for his birthday. Now, if this information is accurate, it means that Dylan Roof passed this background check in a gun store, which is the check that gun control advocates want to see applied to all transactions, public and private. So this begs the question, how did Roof, a known felon, pass the background check that we're being told over and over again is the key to reducing gun violence? Now, Steve Watson goes on to detail that the majority of other mass shooters in recent years also managed to buy these firearms after passing background checks. Obviously, that's not the answer, but strict gun controls in general do not work. Just take a look at Chicago. Chicago is the model city for gun control advocates, and it's just as violent, if not worse, now. There's been at least 192 known murders in Chicago this year alone, 167 of which were shootings. On Memorial Day weekend alone, 12 people were killed, 43 more were wounded. But how did Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel respond? By proposing even more gun control. And despite the UK's near eradication of private gun ownership, the overall rate of violent crime in the UK is about 4 times higher than the US, 125% more rape victims per year, as well as 133% more assault victims per year than the US. So as Kit Daniels points out, gun control is actually going to kill more blacks. So it's not the answer. And like we point out again and again, gun control does not keep guns out of the hands of those who are meant to do harm. And mass murderers target gun-free zones. But for whatever reason, gun control advocates are calling for even more gun-free zones. But in fact, gun control, these calls for gun control have actually backfired spectacularly. Now, in the wake of this shooting, people there are saying, you know, we're going to go ahead and arm ourselves. If that's what the NRA is saying we need to do, we're going to go ahead and do that. So these are people that are just frustrated with what the media has been portraying as an increase in white on black crime. They took this shooting as a sign to procure guns in self-defense. They've started this Twitter hashtag, "We will shoot back," as a means of communicating that they're not going to be victimized by white supremacists. And there, that tweet right there, you'll see Sankofa Brown tweets, "If my mother isn't safe at church, I will make that church safe myself. And of course, that's what we have been saying all along. That's really the answer. Now, coming up later in the show, David Knight is going to be interviewing Charles von Weck. Now, von Weck was the author of Shooting Back, The Right and Duty of Self-Defense. 22 years ago, black gunmen went to an all-white church in South Africa with the intention of slaughtering all 1,000 people that were in attendance at that church. They were armed with AK-47s, they had grenades, they had Molotov cocktails, and they were going in to slaughter everyone. But one man with a 38 and five bullets was able to send these attackers packing. They stopped them. Now, these attackers were able to kill 11 people. They injured 58 more. But von Weck, who was there on a fluke, actually, he just was there in attendance at the church that day. He was there. He had his gun. And the gunmen weren't expecting anyone there at the church. They thought that it was just peaceful Christians there who wouldn't be armed. So this one man was able to stop these attackers from killing all 1,000 people. Very powerful story. That's coming up at the end of the show. But first, once again, you know, immediate calls for gun control, but no calls for pharmaceutical regulations. Once again, another mass murderer was on drugs that were linked to violent outbursts. We point out it was Suboxone, which is a narcotic that is used to treat opiate addiction. And it's a habit-forming drug that has been connected with sudden outbursts of aggression. As the website SSRI Stories profusely documents, there are literally hundreds of examples of mass shootings, murders, and other violent episodes that have been committed by individuals on psychiatric drugs over the past three decades. But considering that it's pharmaceutical giants that pump millions of dollars in ad revenue pretty much every month, you know, they're the ones that are propping up these networks. The networks will risk losing all of that ad revenue if they link these mass murders to those pharmaceutical drugs like Paxil and Zoloft and Prozac and these other things that mass shooters again and again are under the influence of these type of drugs. Now, this is no excuse for the race angle and that a lot of people are getting, you know, upset that whenever there's a mass shooting, people connect it with these SSRIs and saying, well, now you're, you know, trying to negate the fact that there was a racial issue with that. There are other useful idiots in this race war, and I'm going to break that down coming up. So we're definitely going to cover that. But first, while we were distracted, the House rushed through the TPA bill yesterday. Now, this is the TPA bill, which is going to grant fast-track authority to the president. It's going to make it easier for this president and the next one to rush through trade deals like the TPP, the TPIP, and TISA. So this is a doozy. But now we have reps coming out blaming Drudge Report and Obamatrade.com for spreading misinformation and saying, oh, stop telling people that we're working on this secret trade agreement. They don't like anyone getting around their disinfo agents in the mainstream media. So no doubt sites like the Drudge Report and Infowars.com are going to continue to face pressure from the system. You know, they don't want us outing them. They don't want us explaining to people what the issue is with this secret trade deal. Now, today on the Alex Jones Show, Jesse Ventura actually called in to talk about his court case and how the mainstream media is now going to court to try to have the legal authority to lie to anybody, anyone that they choose.
Former Minnesota governor, TV star, movie star, best-selling author, former mayor, Jesse Ventura joins us back in the United States in Minnesota. He also hosts Off the Grid TV on Aura Television, very popular. Governor, I tell you, when you broke this down to me yesterday, it was staggering. You've learned more today. This is a big deal. Tell us exactly what's happened.
Well, what's happened is this, Alex. I won the trial. It was in front of a jury. The jury found for me for defamation. Then there was a second count for unjust enrichment because of that defamation, that they used the defamation to enrich themselves and make millions of dollars. And the jury awarded me roughly 25% in unjust enrichment. Well, this, and we'll clarify right now, 50 is a little high. I'll read it. I've got it right in front of me. This is a motion for leave to file brief, whatever it is, AMICICURIAE. Now, that's legal jargon, of 33 media companies and organizations in support of the 8th Circuit Court of Appeals, 8th Circuit District, urging a reversal of this decision. Now, in layman's terms, what this means, they want the ability to be able to write lies about anybody. Now, it just happens I'm a pretty big public figure, so they can, but, and so many people out there are going to think, well, this will never affect me. I'm not a public figure like Jesse Ventura. No media is ever going to lie about me. Well, that may be true, but it's still, this is a mega thing to our freedom and to protecting ourselves from the corporate fascist takeover that we're seeing. And what they want, if this is overturned, they will then have the ability to lie about you and make profit from those lies, and you will have no way to redress or no way to be compensated for the damage they do to you. So it's going to give them free rein. It's going to set the bar so high. The bar is already high, but it's going to set the bar so high that they will be able to lie and get away with it, and there'll be nothing any individual out there can do. I fought this fight now by myself. It's 3.5 years now, Alex, and it's drained me financially. And my attorney said this could end up in the Supreme Court, because we do have the Supreme Court decision back in 1960 backing us. So if the 8th Circuit Court of Appeals rules for them, they will actually be going against a Supreme Court decision already on the books. So this could go all the way to the High Court. I'm urging people. I've never did this before, really, Alex. I guess I did when I ran for governor and mayor asking for votes. And this is hard for me to do, being a person like I am, but I've got to ask for help on this. I need help to fight this fight. Because the 33, I mean, it's a who's who, Alex. Let me go down the list. Could I?
Absolutely. Last night we talked, and you hadn't even seen the document yet. Just your lawyer said it was scores.
Let me go down the list of who it is.
Before we do that, Governor, let me just explain to folks, to be clear here. The major media, from the New York Times to Fox News, who are signed on to this, you're going to go over the list, they are saying they want immunity to be able to lie, just like vaccine makers want immunity. This is a license to steal, basically, people's identities. It's a license to say, I'm a bomber, or Alex Jones is a child molester, or Joe Smith's a bank robber, when we're not.
And it makes it available that they can make profit from making those statements, that they will incur a great profit. And what they're trying to do is stop you from being able to stop them from making a profit from the lies.
It's unprecedented. It is.
Oh, yes, it is. This is unprecedented.
This is big. So please break down what your top lawyer told you, the angles of this, and who's signing on to.
Well, I got the list right here. You got A&E Television Networks. We all know them from cable, A&E. Advanced Publication, Inc., American Society of News Editors, Association of Alternative News Media, the Association of American Publishers, Inc., the Authors Guild, Inc., BuzzFeed, Inc., the Center for Investigative Reporting, Inc., Cox Media Group, Inc., EW Scripps Company, First Amendment Coalition, Forbes Media, LLC, Gannett Company, Incorporated, Gawker Media, Hatchet Book Group, Inc., the Hearst Corporation, Landmark Media Enterprises, the Media Law Resource Center, the Minnesota Newspaper Association. So even my own state of Minnesota stabs their governor in the back on this one. It shouldn't surprise me. They did it while I was governor, too.
Total traitors.
The Minnesota Newspaper Association, Motion Picture Association of America, MPA, the Association of Magazine Media, the National Association of Broadcasters, the National Press Photographers Association, National Public Radio, Inc., New York Media, LLC, the New York Times, Newspaper Association of America, North Jersey Media Group, Inc., Penguin Random House, LLC, the Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press, and Time Incorporated, and Tribune Publishing Company, LLC, and the WP Company, LLC, which is the Washington Post.
They are so scared of you because you took on Goliath, you beat them, and now they're all piling in because they all tell so many lies now. Their executives have told them, go ahead and lie. They wouldn't lie as much just 4 or 5 years ago. I mean, they say outrageous lies about you and I and others constantly, and I guess they're scared we're going to start suing them, so they want the court to say they're allowed to enrich themselves off lying about people. That is incredible.
Yeah, that's what they're asking the court to do. Because they're putting it in light that this is an alternative for punitive damages, and of course you can't get punitive damage against an estate.
I wonder if they'll. I'm surprised Brian Williams isn't a signatory to this.
Anyway, though, getting back to it, Alex, I never dreamed that this would explode to the level that it has. That the entire this is a who's who of the entire mainstream media of the United States of America.
I know it is. Former Governor Jesse Ventura, who stood up, fought the hard fight, was told it's really going to be hard to win, still did it because he was lied about. He was defamed. They said he was there happy that vets were dead when he'd been at their commencement, and he just stood up against it, and he won, and he used the American system to do it, and they're trying to overthrow our system right now. I want to talk about a perfect storm today. And the perfect storm I'm going to discuss is a really good perfect storm. I have prayed, literally, to be able to find a high-quality gun sponsor that is affordable and that is extremely well-made and effective that I can promote to my audience. About 6 months ago, we get contacted by Head Down Firearms, hdfirearms.com. Low cost compared to competitors, super high quality, super lightweight, super accurate, and the experts salivate over it and love it. Their entire line of 5.56, 308, and their accessories are simply amazing, and it's designed by battle-hardened vets that know what they wish they would have had. You need to go to hdfirearms.com today, or you can visit headdownproducts.com. That's headdownproducts.com. Your liver can be full of fatty deposits, built-up toxins, and even dangerous objects known as liver stones. We worked with the top developers in the field of detox to take tried and true herbs and other compounds known to safely cleanse the liver and fused it with the latest research and technological development on concentrating these ingredients to give you the maximum effect. Liver Shield is the only liver support product on the market that uses a patented Spigerex blend of powerful organic herbs that support detoxification. And when you visit InfoWarsLife.com, see the instructional video on how to do a 6-day liver detox. This isn't a game, and let me tell you, the results are dramatic. Liver Shield is totally organic and made of the safest high-quality herbs. But that said, you need to consult your physician before you do the full detox. Liver Shield can also be used daily by itself for overall upkeep of the liver. Secure your Liver Shield today exclusively at InfoWarsLife.com for the lowest price available. That's InfoWarsLife.com or call 888-253-3139.
Well, when tragedy happens, people always want to start pointing the finger of blame. And of course, now Drudge Report is on the receiving end of that, saying that he is helping to foment this race war. Drudge is, you know, one of the largest news aggregators in the world. And that's what he does, is put the news stories out there. So here we have tweets blaming the Charleston shooting here on Drudge Report. And now we're wondering, how fast will they blame it on InfoWars? Because they always like to pull our website into this, even though we have been condemning racial violence since the Ferguson episode took place. We have been condemning it, but we are pointing out how this racial division is being used to foment this civil unrest. Now, again, pointing out that it's happening. Whether you want to talk about it or not, things are happening. Now, I talked to you a little earlier in the show about activists now starting the hashtag We Will Shoot Back, which is a nod to the armed resistance in the Mississippi Freedom Movement during the civil rights era. So now people are this hashtag is trending now. We will shoot back, basically saying that they're not going to lay down and be terrorized by white supremacists. But here at InfoWars, while we are exposing one side of the race war, you know, we've reported how Soros has funded the Black Lives Matter movement, but we would be naive to not consider some other possibilities, some other useful idiots in this race war. Now, we know historically both sides are funded by the globalists. We know that both sides are agitated there a little bit. Soros isn't just funding Black Lives Matter. We know he's also helping to back the neo-Nazis in the Ukraine. So you see, it's kind of, you know, all over the place. So who is funding the other side? There are very powerful people in these white supremacist groups. And of course, these are people who also would like to see a race war take place. Now, this stuff has happened in the past. We've seen white supremacists try and start these race wars in the past, but the climate has never been right until now. Now, let's take a look at one historically infamous event, Helter Skelter. Now, this was Charles Manson and his Manson family that were believing in this Helter Skelter apocalyptic type war. Manson had been predicting racial war for some time before he used this term Helter Skelter. And he said that this war would start in the summer of 69. And in late June of that year, he told a male family member that Helter Skelter was ready to happen. And he said, Blackie never did anything without Whitey showing him how. And he said, it looks like we're going to have to show Blackie how to do it. So obviously this very, you know, coming from this very racist paradigm, he then goes on to have his family commit these gruesome murders with the intent that they could pin it on Black people to foment this race war. So they did all this to instigate this race war. And, now this Charleston shooter, Dylan Roof, is saying that he did what he did to start a race war. So it's not just this Black Lives Matter or the Red Guards or whatever. We do need to take a look at some of these other extremist groups in America. A family member told a journalist that Dylan Roof was a member of some racist groups and that he had become a loner in recent months. And we've seen patches on a jacket that was worn by the shooter. And those are symbols of the white supremacist movement. The patch that has the orange, white and blue stripes is the flag of South Africa's apartheid government. The patch below that is the flag of the former white-controlled country of Rhodesia, which later became Zimbabwe. And also, South Carolina is home to 19 known hate groups. You can take a look at the map there. This includes two factions of the Ku Klux Klan and four white nationalist organizations. This is according to the Southern Poverty Law Center, who we know likes to keep track of these hate groups. Now, in July 2014, residents in Oconee County, South Carolina, reportedly found bags in their street that contained candy and a leaflet that was trying to recruit for the Ku Klux Klan. And it said, save our land, join the Klan. Now, when people called the phone number on that flyer, it was trying to recruit people in response to immigration. But it mimics the twisted motivation of Dylan Roof. He told a friend that he thought Blacks were taking over the world and someone needed to do something about it for the white race. So obviously we're seeing the same sort of twisted motivation there. And, you know, also we can't overlook the fact, look how quickly the KKK rallied support there for the police officer Darren Wilson, who, of course, shot and killed Michael Brown there in Ferguson. I thought the race war was going to pop off right then and there, because to me, that was pretty shocking and very bold and quite curious. There are useful idiots on both sides of the race war. Do you think the FBI is just going into mosques and trying to instigate someone into, committing jihad? You know, we report on that all the time. There are agent provocateurs everywhere. The Daily Mail is reporting of hundreds of messages now being posted by neo-Nazis in one of their internet forums in support of Dylan Thomas, in support of what he's done, and talking about this pending race war. So someone tweeted out, "Sometimes in war, there are casualties." And another one writes, "When will it be acceptable to fight back?" So this is all going on, and we can't ignore that. We can't just say that there's terrorists here and you know, provocateurs here and ignore a whole other faction here in this race war. And so obviously this ongoing media threat now with the guns and racism, it is an attempt to reopen a wound, create sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy for this race war. And we've been warning you with Operation Garden Plot and all of these other long-term plans that have been put in place for the civil unrest. Now is the time, and we're seeing it in all different areas. But we know, you know, now that most of us are intelligent enough to know that this foreign terrorism is really just an excuse to take away our rights. Now they are having to create an enemy from within.
In the past decade, we have witnessed unparalleled scientific discoveries in the area of health. But no one has put together a formula that focuses directly on brain health, nerve growth factors, and optimizing your cellular energy at the same time. DNA Force is one of the most expensive formulas to produce. Some of the ingredients in DNA Force are $12,000 a kilogram. We are using the coveted, patented, only American source of PQQ, CoQ10, and more. You want the best that's out there at the lowest price anywhere? Well, we're bringing you a total win-win. The ultimate value, cutting-edge, trailblazing game changer that also supports the InfoWar. We have produced a limited run of DNA Force, and it will take up to 12 weeks to produce more once we sell out. Secure your DNA Force today at InfoWarsLife.com or call toll-free 888-253-3139. DNA Force from InfoWars Life.
Another major health threat, this one in Toledo, Ohio, where everybody in the entire city has been told not to drink the water.
Ohio's governor declaring a state of emergency.
Did you know that the average person uses about 80 to 100 gallons of water at home every single day? If there's a water emergency, will you be prepared?
Panicked residents forming long lines throughout the day.
We're here at a supermarket in Toledo. You can see the shelves empty where water once was.
To stay safe and healthy during a crisis, you must have access to safe, clean water. Water which will not be available at your local grocery store.
There's a mad dash on right now to stock up on supplies.
The ProPure Pro 1 G2.0 water filtration system is a must-have for every modern, independently minded household. Protect your family's safety during an emergency. Go to InfoWarsStore.com today to purchase your ProPure Pro 1 G2.0 water filtration system or call 1-888-253-3139.
The massacre at St. James's Church in Cape Town, South Africa, on the 25th of July 1993, sent shockwaves around the world. That night, the evening service was interrupted by a group of men who burst through the doors and fired indiscriminately on the congregation of some 1,300 people. Such damage was wreaked in 30 seconds that the lives of many would be affected for years to come. The attack left 11 dead and more than 50 seriously injured.
Just after the song item, as it was coming to an end, I heard pops and I thought there was something wrong with the sound system. And then people started screaming and they started falling down between the seats. I did the same thing. There was an explosion. And shortly after that, a massive explosion. And I felt what I now know to be shrapnel hit the side of my leg. Because the hand grenade exploded two rows behind us. And when I looked down, there was just blood down the side of my body and on the carpet, and my trousers were covered in blood.
Yes, the stories abound of acts of bravery in the reflex of the moment.
Just a little bit of what happened in that church. Certainly a horrific situation. These were terrorists who came in, four men with AK-47s, hurling grenades, shooting at a congregation of 1,000 people. Their intention was to kill everyone. The only reason that didn't happen was because of the man we're about to speak to today. Charles Van Wyk is a South African missionary. He was there that day visiting that church. He had a .38 with only 5 shots. You know, God saved the nation of Israel with David having 5 stones. He ran these guys off with God's help with this .38 loaded with only 5 cartridges. He's the author of a best-selling book, Shooting Back, The Right and Duty of Self-Defense. And of course, it's about the events of that day, but it is also about the importance of being able to defend yourself. Your right, your duty to defend other people. And that's what we're going to talk to him about today. Again, Charles van Wyk. Thank you for joining us. Now, I was talking to you and you just said that you're a missionary. You basically go all over Africa. You're not really associated with a particular church. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes. I'm a full-time missionary. I work mainly in Central Africa and Southern Africa. That means I visit various churches and involved with many different denominations.
So were you visiting that church that day?
The St. James Church that I was going to was actually my home church at the time. So I was a parishioner there. I was a member of the congregation. I wasn't in any leadership at that time in that specific church.
Okay. And tell us from your perspective, what was happening immediately before the shooting broke out at St. James from your perspective?
Well, we were sitting in the church service. It's quite a large church. There were about 1,000 people present that evening and could easily seat 1,500 people. And we were listening to some young people that were singing on the stage. And the church is built very much like a cinema. So it's high at the back and low in the front with a stage. And the young people were singing to us. And we were just sitting listening to them before the incident occurred.
And then what was your first clue that something was going on? How did it happen from your perspective?
Well, right at the front door of the church where everybody could see right next to the stage, there was a noise. And I thought, you know, these people should really come in at the back door. They shouldn't make such a big scene at the front. And these terrorists stepped in to the congregation. And it was interesting because I had thought that there was a play taking place. And it's only when they started opening up fire with their automatic assault rifles and they lobbed the grenades into the congregation, and I saw the effects of the rifle shooting where wood was actually shooting out of the benches, splinters were shooting up into the air, that I realized this was not a show or a play that was taking place, that this was a serious terrorist attack on the congregation.
You know, I hear that over and over again. People always say, yeah, I thought it was a play. You hear that a lot from people. It takes a while for it to register that this is really happening, doesn't it?
Yeah, David, that's right. It takes I don't want to say a couple of seconds. It's probably a split second to realize what's going on. But it's almost like your brain and your eyes are trying to communicate with each other that this is reality. And it's not a game. It's not a play. And you need to react accordingly.
Exactly. Now, once you realized this was really happening, what did you do at that point?
We went down onto the ground as low as possible. Everybody ducked down. They tried to get as low as possible below the benches, underneath the benches, and tried to keep their heads down. But it's interesting because some people, for instance, one little girl, she just froze. She couldn't move. And her little friends next to her, Richard O'Keel, who was 17, and another young friend, they went down onto the ground. And so Richard was concerned about the little one sitting up, and he knelt on his knees and went up into the air to pull her down onto the ground. And as he went up, he took a bullet in the back of the head, trying to save her life. And another young man, Gerard Harker, is 21 years old. He had a hand grenade land in the aisle next to him, and he fell on top of the grenade with his full body and took a full blow to himself to try and protect the people around him. And his younger brother sitting next to him was also killed in the incident. I went down like everybody else, and I pulled out a .38 special little snub-nose revolver, commonly known as a Saturday Night Special. And I knelt behind the bench in front of me, and I took 2 shots at the attackers. The challenge was that I was sitting about 4th row from the back of the church. And as I mentioned, it's a big 1,500 seater hall that we were in.
Yeah.
And I just realized I took 2 shots and I realized I'm far too far away from the attackers. I'm going to have to try and get in behind them at close range. So I went down onto my haunches. We call it leopard crawl, down on the ground, crawling to the aisle. And I ran out the back door of the church. I had to kick the doors open. And I thought, I'll come in behind the attackers in the front of the church. I'll come in behind them at the door that they entered. And as I ran out the back of the church, and I was coming around the corner, the terrorists were already standing at the getaway car. So in the couple of seconds that I had to kick the doors open and run round, they already had left the church. And what I didn't realize at that time was that inside the church, with one of my two shots from way back, fourth row from the back of the church, I'd actually hit one of them on the hand. Mm. And so they knew there was fire coming from the congregation at them. And so they ran out, but they didn't drive away immediately. When I came running around the corner, one of them was standing at the back left door of the car, and he had his rifle, automatic rifle, on his hip, pointing up to the sky, and he was looking at the door they had come out of. And all I could think was that he was expecting me to come running out of that door because somebody was shooting at them, and he would have just loaded his rifle and blown me away. But by God's grace, I was behind them, and so I took another three shots at them, and they jumped in the car and drove off. And it was due to the blood from his hand where I hit him inside the church that got onto the car seats. And so through forensics, the police managed to trace him and arrest him, one of the four.
Wow. Wow. Now, they were trying to go after a white church. They attacked this church because it was in a white area. But that congregation was 35 to 40% black, wasn't it?
That's correct. That's correct, David. Yes, it was a multiracial church. It appears that they were aiming to get a sort of a church that was completely white. And it seems like their homework wasn't done correctly. And there were many people injured that were non-whites. And so there were a lot of non-whites in the church. But that's the way it panned out for them. We also had Russian seamen that were inside the church, and they would sit and during the beginning of the service when the singing was taking place, they would sit with us, and then they would go to a separate hall where they'd have an interpreted service or a sermon that would take place for them. And unfortunately, they were there when the attack also took place. One of them, Dmitry Makagon, had a grenade land in his lap and blew off two legs and an arm. And he's still alive and living in Cape Town today.
Really? Wow. Well, it certainly was God's providence that you were able to stop this with just a 38 and five shots. But you were the man that God used. Tell us how you came to carry a 38 with you to church.
David, a long time before that, I was traveling with a friend near a little town called Wellington outside of Cape Town. We were going through to his parents' farm, and I was driving a small little pickup, very small little vehicle, and all of a sudden there were tires burning in the streets of the car, and that was the African National Congress, which was Nelson Mandela's political party. They were burning tires in the road, and as my car came to a standstill, they started throwing rocks and bricks at our vehicle and rocking the vehicle with these bricks that were smashing the windows and denting the vehicle. So that was what happened then. And after that, I made the decision to purchase a firearm. And the next time my life was threatened, to use it to protect myself and my family. But it was a long walk for me. I'm telling a quick story in a few minutes, It was a long theological issue for me as a Christian, whether I could carry a firearm in civilian life and then use it to defend myself. I didn't.
Well, certainly looking back at this, I mean, in hindsight, we can see that you saved a lot of lives. I mean, with 58 people that were wounded and another 11 that were killed, and these guys said after they caught them that they'd been given instructions to throw petrol bombs, Molotov cocktails into the church. It would have been massive carnage if you hadn't fired back at them. And they fled.
Many people said they were expecting them to actually walk up and down the aisles and just mow people down.
Yes.
And after the attack, I reached out to them with the gospel of Jesus Christ. And one of the unit commanders said to me, I knew all about the attack before it took place. And our greatest desire was that there wouldn't be a living soul afterwards.
Wow. Wow. And you stopped that by having a gun. As I said, We can see in retrospect, but talk to people who are pacifists, people who are Christian pacifists. Tell them about this journey that you took and how important it is, because we're looking at this right now. We're thinking about the political aspect of it. Every time we have a shooting in America, we have the president and those who want to take away our firearms. They will use this as an opportunity to try to do that. But I want you to talk to the people out there, maybe who are sitting on the sidelines, who are naively thinking that the government is going to protect them. Because how long did this whole thing take? It didn't take that long, did it?
No, David, it's probably a couple of seconds. You know, there was write-ups in the newspapers talking about it being minutes. It was all a couple of seconds. A grenade takes, what, 5 to 7 seconds to go off. And in that time, everything was finished and over and they were gone.
Yes.
So, and as I said, some people were expecting them to walk up and down the aisles. That never happened because one of them had been injured, you know, shot at. And so they ran away.
And no matter how good the government is, the government would not have been able to help anyone there. And we've had honest sheriffs in America tell people in high crime cities like Detroit, look, we'll do what we can to stop these people and arrest them, but you need to get a firearm. You need to train yourself so that you're not a victim. And then we'll find the bad guys after you defend yourself. But we can't get there quickly enough. So talk to Christians and tell them about this theological journey that you went through, your perspective.
Sure, sure. Well, we have a saying that a gun in the hand is better than a cop on the phone. And so I think that gives you a bit of insight into the way we feel about it here. But the scriptures are very clear. 1 Timothy 5 verse 8 says, if anyone does not provide for his relatives and especially for his immediate family, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. And provision isn't only for food. Provision is also for the security of your family. That's why people put locks on doors. That's why they have security gates and burglar bars and these sorts of things where we live in South Africa. It's because we need to protect our families. And if we don't do anything to protect them, then the scripture is saying that we're worse than an unbeliever. In other words, this is a primary responsibility that we have.
Yes. If Christians are not going to defend the innocent, that is worse than an unbeliever. To me, I look at it as if someone were to come into my home and they were to start to beat my child in front of me. And I just sat there and say, well, I can't strike them because I'm a Christian. No, I have to defend the innocent because I'm a Christian.
That's right. Exactly. And I wrote a book on this called Shooting Back. And the subtitle is The Right and Duty of Self-Defense. In other words, it's not just a right that you have. You have a duty before God to protect the innocent, and especially those whom he's entrusted to you. And so it's actually a disgrace for Christian men to say that they're not willing to protect the innocent. In fact, when it talks in the scriptures about how a man loves his wife, the idea is that you must love her like Christ loved the church. That means you need to be prepared to die for your wife, not just stand by and watch while she gets raped or murdered by somebody.
Yes.
That's just pure cowardice in the face of the enemy.
Yes, and certainly it's interesting because, you know, we typically think about that as being our immediate family, our loved ones, maybe possibly extend it to our friends. God put the life of 1,000 people in your hands that day.
That's right. And, these things happen around us here in South Africa. It's not the only time I've needed to protect myself and other people. I've also had an attempt at carjacking in which I got into a gunfight in a squatter camp. And so we live very, very stressed lives here in South Africa because of the crime rate. And so we got to be prepared all the time for these sorts of things.
Yes, absolutely. Tell us a little bit about the gun laws in South Africa. What were the gun laws at the time and what are they now?
Yeah, the gun laws at the time were far easier to get a firearm at that time. If I remember correctly, it took me about 10 days to go through the application process. And I was given a license. The license fees in those days was about R2, which is less than 20 cent American cents. And in no time, I could go fetch my firearm at the shop. So we had a licensing process. We now have a new Firearms Control Act, which is far more onerous than the original Arms and Ammunition Act. And this is a terrible piece of legislation. Just to give you a little bit of an idea, if I'm accused and have charges laid for me against me with regards to any misuse of a firearm in South Africa, I need to go to court and try and prove my innocence. I'm considered guilty.
Oh, yeah.
I need to go prove my innocence.
Wow.
And that, there's no other law in South Africa that follows this kind of thinking, except when it comes to firearms. So the communist government in South Africa are neurotic and very concerned about the public owning firearms. And they should be with
yes.
the terrible things that they're doing in our country.
Yes, absolutely. And we understand here in America that the fundamental purpose of the Second Amendment was a check on the abuse of power. And just having firearms is a check without it ever having to resort to violence. When they know that a massive amount of the public has firearms, that does act as a restraint, just as we saw with the mutual assured destruction doctrine of Russia and America both having nuclear wars. Being armed and having the person who might come after you violently know that you're armed, that is a deterrent not only to crime of individuals, but also to crimes of government. That's why we see, as you're seeing in South Africa with a communist government, it's always the communists who always come after the guns. Of course, that's what we're basically seeing here in America. It's the party of socialism that is relentless on this attack to take away our firearms.
Sure. An armed society is a polite society.
Yes.
And I was doing some filming at Parliament with the commander of the troops that shot up our church, the commander of the terrorists. He actually gave go-ahead for the attack. He was the one that commanded the attack to take place. And he introduced me to a former colleague of his, and these were his words. He says, "There we thought the church was a gun-free zone, but boy, did Charles have a surprise for us."
Yes.
And so
yes.
it's very clear that they, the reason they attacked the church, they thought it was a white liberal church and there'd be nobody there armed to stop the carnage from going ahead.
Precisely. And that's why we see the attacks on schools, why we see the attacks on churches. And that's what we're trying to get people to understand, is that you can never eradicate crazy people. You can never eradicate people who hate you because of your race, people who hate you because you're a Christian, for whatever reason. You can't eliminate the crazy people, the violent people. You have to be able to protect yourself. And when they take away firearms with laws, the only people that are going to be disarmed are the law-abiding citizens. The criminals will still be able to find them. We've said this over and over again. Now, you founded an organization there in South Africa, Gun Owners of South Africa. And is that a lobbying education organization there? Sounds like Gun Owners of America here in the United States.
Yes, it's very much. In fact, Larry Pratt, the executive director of Gun Owners of America, came over to South Africa for the launch of Gun Owners of South Africa. And I'm one of the founding members of the organization. And we basically do what your Gun Owners of America is doing back there, and that's to educate the population, fighting for our gun rights, and basically trying to have the Firearms Control Act that I mentioned a few minutes ago, have that scrapped altogether.
And I saw an article, Charles, on Gun Owners of America's site saying that it was an article that Larry Pratt had written that was instrumental in helping you to get over this objection that you had to carrying firearms. As you said, it was a struggle as to whether or not it was an ethical thing to do, and it was that article from Larry Pratt that helped you to work through the issues. Is that correct?
That's right, David. It was a wonderful article you wrote about the biblical principles of self-defense. And in fact, I took the whole article with Larry's permission and put it as a chapter in my book, Shooting Back. And so it's all in there if anybody wants to purchase it. And it made such a difference in my life, and as you've mentioned, the life of at least 1,000 other people.
Yes, you know, it was... As I said in the introduction, you know, David came against Goliath with five smooth stones, and you went against these terrorists in a gigantic attack with just five rounds and a .38. I really admire your courage. You were a man that was in the right place. God used you powerfully in that, and I hope that he will continue to use you not only to help people to protect themselves, but I understand you're a missionary still there in South Africa. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, I work through Central Africa and Southern Africa, and the work in Central Africa actually just really backs up my stand for firearms. I work in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, which isn't democratic or republic. When you hear that in Africa, you got to know it's communism. And the people are completely disarmed, and they live in absolute fear of the government and rebel soldiers. because mm-hmm. they cannot defend themselves. And colleagues of my pastor friends in Congo have been buried alive by rebel soldiers.
Oh, huh.
And I said to them, why did the congregation not take up arms and say to the rebel soldiers, go ahead, make our day? And one of the pastors said to me, no, we've all been disarmed. So I said, well, was a law passed? He said, no, the president just sent the army in to do house-to-house searches across the country, and they just confiscated everybody's weapons. That's basically what they did.
Mm.
And so the Christians now are sitting ducks.
Yeah.
I've also just arrived home now after being in the Cameroon, where over 90 people were murdered and 500 injured by Boko Haram attacks. The Muslims that are attacking in these areas, there again, the firearm rate for individuals in the country is extremely low. And so the radical Muslims can go ahead and do whatever they like, and nobody can stop them.
Wow. Well, tell us how, I know a lot of people are going to want to read your book, Shooting Back. You've also got a DVD that is available. Where can they find those?
They can find it from my website, missionaryinafrica.com. Both of them have been published and created by WND.com. It used to be called WorldNet Daily, WND.com, and also available from Amazon.com. And the book's called Shooting Back, subtitled The Right and Duty of Self-Defense.
Thank you so much. Thank you for sharing your story with us. And I'm sure a lot of people are going to want to hear more about your life, more about that experience that you had there. Thank you so much, Charles van Wyk. Again, as Charles said, the intention was not to leave a person alive in that church. They would have walked up and down the aisles. They would have burned it down. But one guy that had the courage to shoot back, that had the foresight to understand that carrying a weapon to protect yourself, to protect others, is not only your right, but it is your duty. So we really appreciate Charles coming on and talking to us about that experience. That's it for tonight's news. If you're watching this on YouTube, please subscribe to our channel. And if you're not a subscriber to Prison Planet TV, please become a paid subscriber. That helps to support our operation. You can share it with 20 other people simultaneously, as well as access to all of Alex Jones's documentaries. Again, that's it for tonight. Join us on Monday at 7 Central, 8 p.m. Eastern.
Your liver can be full of fatty deposits, built-up toxins, and even dangerous objects known as liver stones. We worked with the top developers in the field of detox to take tried and true herbs and other compounds known to safely cleanse the liver and fused it with the latest research and technological development on concentrating these ingredients to give you the maximum effect. Liver Shield is the only liver support product on the market that uses a patented Spigerex blend of powerful organic herbs that support detoxification. And when you visit InfoWarsLife.com, see the instructional video on how to do a 6-day liver detox. This isn't a game, and let me tell you, the results are dramatic. Liver Shield is totally organic and made of the safest high-quality herbs. But that said, you need to consult your physician before you do the full detox. Liver Shield can also be used daily by itself for overall upkeep of the liver. Secure your Liver Shield today exclusively at InfoWarsLife.com for the lowest price available. That's InfoWarsLife.com or call 888-253-3139.
You are watching the InfoWars Nightly News, which airs 7 p.m. Central at InfoWarsNews.com. And your support is helping us defend liberty worldwide.